Welcome into the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show this morning. No basketball coaches in because Steve and I are late traveling back from Kansas City as the Bullpups took on Bishop Miege last night. But we do have a special Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show this morning. In with us is Bullpup head football coach Chase Pavlovich. Coach, it's been a while since you've been in here with us. It feels good to be back in the routine that we had of you coming in here, and it somewhat feels like it's football season again.
Well, it certainly does. I wish it was. We've got a bunch of kids that still want to get out on the practice field and make themselves better.
Well, it's been about 3 weeks since the end of the season, and a lot of things have happened since then. Number one, the state championship game was played between Andale and Bishop Miege. I've got to ask, did you watch that game?
No, I didn't. I've talked to Dylan Schmidt, Andale's football coach, about what took place, and everyone kind of knew what was going to happen. Would have taken a really special night for Andale to upset Miege, and they're just a really good football team. And the interesting thing about Miege is they're very young too. They've got quite a few sophomores that started in various different programs as freshmen and now are at Miege. So it was as expected.
And Bishop Miege with over 600 yards of offense. And I know when you see that number, it makes you wonder, how would our defense, as good as our defense was this year, how would have our defense been able to try to contain this high-powered Miege offense?
Well, for many different reasons, we wanted to get to the state championship game, but that was high on our priority list. We wanted to play the best offense in the state of Kansas, all classifications, and we really felt like we had one of the best defense in the state of Kansas, all classifications. So it would have been a heck of a matchup.
Well, and speaking of some all classification stuff, there have been a lot of postseason awards that have come out since the end of the season, and in particular, one that to me is really cool is that Sports in Kansas, which does a really good job of promoting high school football especially, and if you don't follow them on Twitter and you're a high school sports fan, then you're missing out. Wyatt Seidel was named the 4A1 Defensive Player of the Year, and he was nominated for Statewide Player of the Year, all classifications. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me that he had such a good year. He didn't even win Defensive Player of the Year in his own league and was the Statewide Defensive Player of the Year. Now, that says a lot about Jace Alexander with how good his season was. But Wyatt Seidel, the awards will continue to come in for him, but this was one heck of a fall that he had.
There's no question. You know, there's coaches across the state of Kansas have a lot of respect for Wyatt, and especially his unselfish decision to help the team at any cost and move up to the offensive line, even though he was a top 25 running back going into the season. So there's a heck of a lot of respect for Wyatt and Jace. Jace is one of those kids that's very deserving of a statewide honor also.
Speaking of respect for Wyatt, how many times has an offensive lineman been named Offensive Player of the Year in a league? Wyatt Seidel was named Player of the Year in the AVCTL for offense at the offensive line, a position he had never played.
Yeah, and it's unique to, as you mentioned, it's unique to have a Player of the Year on the offensive line. And after I explained the situation to all of the coaches, it was a unanimous decision. Everyone, you know, across the state has a lot of respect, but when you get into a closed meeting with a bunch of coaches and you explain to them the situation, and those guys, all of our coaches in our league, they know what Wyatt stands for and they know what he can do. And after hearing that, it was all over. It was, as I mentioned, a unanimous decision.
Steve and I were joking the other night at the home basketball game against Derby. So a lot of the football guys were in the student section and they start their mosh pit. And I was saying, God, I wouldn't want to be over next to Wyatt during that happening. I think that somebody's going to get knocked down with him over there.
There's a whole lot of guys I wouldn't want to be next to when they start that third quarter mess. But it's good to see our guys out supporting other programs, and this is a close-knit group.
Well, and speaking of supporting other programs, there are a lot of guys from this football team that have made their transition seamlessly from the football field onto the basketball court. Jace Alexander knocked down a big three early in the game the other night. You were in attendance. Is it fun for you to watch those guys that you see compete in the most intense sport to go out and play a sport like basketball?
Yeah, absolutely. A sport like basketball, sport like wrestling, We really love our guys, and I love to see them compete no matter what it is. We're actually going to head out to a bowling competition soon. We got a couple of kids that play football that the bowl for the high school. So I just want to see our kids competitive, and it really doesn't matter what the sport is. I just enjoy seeing that.
And, you know, we don't get to see these guys out of their football uniforms, but when you had – to look out on the court Tuesday night and see Cody Stufflebean, knowing he's only a sophomore. Mm-hmm. He's going to get better, but I don't think people realize just how physical of an impressive an athlete he is now that they see him in the basketball uniform.
Yeah, he made some plays on Tuesday night against some high-caliber kids athletically and skilled-wise. We know that Cody can move people around. He's, as you mentioned, he's a big, strong, physical kid, but he's also very skilled, and when you have those attributes, you know, there's some special things are going to happen for that kid.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Jace Pavlovich on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show, a special football edition to wrap up this season. You had a really cool event this past week on Monday night, your team banquet, and I've been to some team banquets that are kind of boring, and there isn't a whole lot of thought into it, that it's just the standard thing every year. But I was really kind of blown away at the amount of time that you took to talk about every single player, sophomore through senior. And when I was in high school, I think that our coaches mainly did it through the senior class and went into detail more about them. In my senior year of baseball, there were three of us, so they were able to take a little bit more time. But for to go through 60, 70 guys and individually talk about everything that they do well, it was a really cool event for those guys, and maybe some of those sophomores that didn't get the playing time they thought they could have had. Mm-hmm. Maybe it gives them a little bit of energy going into the off season.
Well, you know, first off, I don't know if it's a flaw or not, but I don't have any problem talking about our kids. You know, I love our guys.
Steve and I don't have any problem talking either.
You know, when it comes down to talking about our kids, it's very easy, and the guys work incredibly hard. One thing about it, and I do make it a point to talk about our sophomore kids, because a lot of those times, those sophomores are playing on a Monday night in a JV football game, and then they're expected to turn right around on a Tuesday, and they're expected to be a great practice player, and that's very difficult, especially when you're not playing under the lights on a Friday night, getting all the attention. So I want to make it a point to explain to the people how much we appreciate our sophomores and juniors and guys that don't necessarily play as much on a Friday night, because they're as much of the part of the team as anyone is.
And another thing that I think is kind of cool about talking to those sophomores, talking about the juniors, is it's kind of a recruiting tool that when you hear your name and you say, this kid's got so much potential, this kid, he did some great things on the scout team, I think that that is something that can bring them back out. If there was ever a kid who was on the fence and he walked through that line on Monday night and you read off what you would have said about him, I don't think that they would be on the fence anymore. I think that they would be back and saying, I want to play football. And I think that's another really good thing about that.
There's no question. It's you know, we never lie to our kids. I'm very honest with them. I've had coaches that have lied to me in the past, and I've had coaches that are very honest to me in the past as a player, and I really appreciate brutal honesty, and that's where we're at with our kids. And if there's an area that they need to work on, I'm going to let them know. If there's some things that they've done great, I'm going to let them know. So honest feedback is definitely the best way to go, and it is a motivator on either side.
We're going to talk a little bit about the junior class a little bit later on in the show, but when those guys were standing up on the stage at the banquet, that is a very impressive group, not only just size, but when you start reading off all the accolades that they had on the offensive side of the ball in particular, this is going to be a group that, coming back offensively next year, you won't miss any skill players, really.
No, we've got lose Thomas Diggs, but you know, we have some very talented kids, and you know, we lose some guys on the offensive line this year, but we have some young guys that that have some size and have, as you mentioned, the potential to be a very good football player. And we're excited about our offensive side of the football next season. And defensively, we always seem to regroup. I don't know if we're going to be able to put up the numbers that we've put up in the past 2 years, but we're going to have a sound defense next year as well.
You talk about kids in other sports. If you look at the bullpup wrestling team, it seems like their upper weights are a lot of sophomores and freshmen. You've got some good-looking freshmen that'll be offensive linemen next year. That was kind of the strength of that freshman team was their offensive line. You got some guys, if they get in the weight room, they're going to be, you know, really hard to keep out of the lineup next year. You could have a sophomore or two in your offensive line next year just because they're big and strong and talented.
Yeah, they are. It's not a question of if they're in the weight room. They are in the weight room. And that's one thing about this program that makes it pretty special is that, you know, I've had college coaches come through and, you know, as they talk to our players, they watch us in the weight room a little bit, and they say, my goodness, you have things rolling here. And it's really very simple. Our kids understand you either get in the weight room and you make yourself better athletically, or you're simply not going to be able to play. And that speaks volumes for our program.
And when you talk about the weight room, that really goes back to when Tom Young got here. I know he's kind of a mentor for you. But, you know, I covered a lot of years of bullpup football that were really kind of tough to, you know, kind of tough to write about. But once Tom Young got here and brought his SPS program, that's when the renaissance really started.
Well, in our SPS program, again, it's second to none. We have made a few changes here and there to what Tom did, but the meat and potatoes of it is still the same. They get a personalized workout sheet we print off every Sunday night, and it's a safe way to push kids and make them better athletes in every sport.
And Tom's been out of the program for 3 years, but in reality, he really isn't out of the program, because I know you talked to him, you had him do some scouting for you, looking at film, and you just keep in touch with him. And you got to give Coach Young credit. He was at some of our games this year. He was at the Andale game, I know, and he still has a lot of interest in the bullpup program.
Well, there's no question. You know, when it comes down to it, I talked to Coach Young quite a bit throughout the course of the season, and even now in the off season, we'll meet up this weekend, as a matter of fact, and we'll talk about some things that we want to install in the future, and he'll give me some pros and some cons. And it's just great to have a caliber coach like that, some of the best, arguably the best head coach in the state of Kansas history, and to bounce ideas off of and ask questions to. It's just great.
Yeah, Tom Young won a state championship at three different schools. I can't remember exactly how many games overall he won. It's been a long time since I wrote that story. But if I remember right, he was in the top five all-time wins. And the thing that always struck me about Coach Young is what he told me is, you know, the games are fun, but I love the teaching aspect. He says I could just teach and never even play games because I just love the teaching aspect part of it.
Yeah, that's it is. It's the best part about coaching any sport is being on the practice or on the practice field or in the practice setting with kids and watching them grow through their 4-year career.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Jace Pavlovich on a special football edition on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. We'll take a quick break and come back and start to recap this season and talk in particular about one of the biggest games of the year, the first Buehler game. You're listening to the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show on 96.7 FM, KBBE. We're back in on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. Jim Joyner and Steve Sell here on 96.7 FM KBBE. Instead of a basketball coaches show this morning, a little bit behind from the Bishop Miege games last night up in Kansas City, we have Bullpup football coach Jace Pavlovich joining us for a special football edition. And one of the things that we wanted to do was talk a little bit about the season. Of course, the record was phenomenal, one of the best years in Bullpup football history, 10-2. You rattled off 9 wins in a row. But the first win, the one that never had any in a row, was the Buehler game. Mm-hmm. And at the banquet the other night, you were rattling off some of the accolades from the team and saying, we did this, we did this, we beat Buehler twice, we did this, we beat Buehler twice. So it's very clear how important that first game of the season was for this team. And one of the things that I talked about the other night was it felt like their whole destiny and their whole lives and their whole football career was leading up to that moment, and they never backed down from it. And that's what was so special about it, a 33-21 win on the road at Buehler.
Yeah, you know, our senior bunch, they've been winning a lot of games throughout the course of their career, starting all the way back into fourth grade. And there's only one team that has consistently beat them. And and that is Buehler. Buehler's senior bunch this year was special as well. And I can remember 4 years ago, after our Monday night practice, Coach Young and I, we went down to Buehler to watch our freshman and JV play, and our freshman team was just getting done. And I remember Wyatt Seidel walking off the sideline, and he was crying. These guys had never lost before. And it was a trend that continued throughout the course of their career here. JV, we continuously lost to Buehler with that bunch. And to be able to do what we did this year and beating Buehler twice was spectacular. It was huge for our program, huge for our kids.
And the thing is, you guys were preparing for Buehler mm-hmm. for 9 or 6 months. I mean, several months. You guys were watching film. I you probably know every play that they ran the year before, and you knew what kind of challenge this was. I mean, Buehler had been in the state championship game the year before. They basically had their entire team back except at quarterback, and it just seemed like there was so much focus on Buehler. It was just the first game of the season, you know, mm-hmm. mind you. But, boy, it felt like a state championship game.
Well, you know, we did focus on Buehler. And it's no disrespect to Andale, who obviously had a very good football team, or Mays South, who had a very good football team. But we really felt like the West was going to be won through Buehler. And it wasn't necessarily all of our eggs in one basket week one. But we knew if we wanted to get to where we wanted to be, we had to beat Buehler, plain and simple. So we did devote a lot of our time into beating those guys. And, they're a team that we know well, and they know us very well, too.
Well, they scored 21 points, and people say, well, God, I thought McPherson had such a great defense. But if you'd been at that game mm-hmm. and seen how many times, I think I counted, I do a play-by-play. There were 11 plays for lost yardage, and the young quarterback, Epp for Buehler, was making his first start, and he was just under siege all night, and especially the first half. You pitch a shutout in the first half. Mm-hmm. Dalton Brown, he's just frustrated. He only has like 19 yards at the half. Mm-hmm. To hold, when you went into halftime, are you going, God, we just held Buehler scoreless in the first half?
Yeah.
A team that figured to average about 40 to 50 points a game.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where Buehler's so good up front that they're just going to keep leaning on you, and they're going to pop a big play or two. And that didn't happen for them in week one. And, you know, I was really proud of our guys. At halftime, we were just it's not like we were shell-shocked. It's not like we were just holding on for dear life. It was one of those things where, you know, you look around and our kids just wanted more. Our kids were ready to get back out there and continue to compete.
And that game featured two of the biggest plays, I think, of the season. One, the goal line stand. Mm-hmm. You're up 19-14. You turn the ball over a couple times. The Buehler crowd was really getting into it there, saying, okay, we messed around with this team long enough. Mm-hmm. And then the 94-yard pass from Hoppus, I believe it's to Wired.
Correct.
Chandler Wired. That was really the backbreaker. I thought really that decided the game, because you took it in on the very next play, and mm-hmm. from then on it was your ball game.
Yeah, you know, offensively, we knew what we were going to get. We're going to get a 7-man box, and we talked about this prior to the game. We knew they were going to stack the box, put a lot of defenders in that tackle area, and we knew that we were going to have to bust some big plays in the passing game over the top. And that's one thing, fortunately for us, we're very good at this year, and we expect to be very good at next year too. So, the nature of the way they play their defense really played into our favor that night, especially, you talk about the 95-yard connection to Wired, especially when we were backed up in our own end zone.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Jace Pavlovich on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show this morning. And the Buehler game, a 33-21 win to begin the season. Then the next game, I think everybody in the state went, oh, man, McPherson's the real deal. Then you have a little bit of a letdown at Mays South. You lose 9-0. The defense was phenomenal mm-hmm. that day. And we found out later how good that Mays South defense was going to end up being. But I think that was the game where things didn't necessarily click. I think it was the next game that everything really clicked. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the day that you went, okay, we're not the best team yet. We're going to have to continue to get better. And I think that game, even though it wasn't as bad as it even looks on the scoreboard, 9-0's not that bad, but it really was closer than that. Mm-hmm. I think that was a game that kind of woke everybody up.
Yeah, and it was a humbling experience. This this game is one of the most humbling games out there. And our guys, you know, I think we probably overestimated our abilities a little bit, and it was good for us. Although not at the time, it didn't feel very good. But that loss was very good for us, because we had to get back to basics, really focus on fundamentals, and realize that, guys, you know, it was a great win against Bueller, but that's in the past. And right now we're 1-1, and we've got to get a heck of a lot better.
And May South had just a terrific defense, mm-hmm. too, very comparable to yours. They had a big nose guard, which I was surprised the Seville kid didn't get more honors. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the reasoning was, but against us, 290-pound nose guard was really tough up front. They had a couple of great DNs, and then mm-hmm. a couple guys in the secondary that were really good, too. They were just terrific on defense, but when you look at it down the year, they just weren't quite – they didn't have the explosiveness on offense that you had. They were very reliant on one player. Mm-hmm. They ran the ball. They couldn't throw it very well, whereas your offense was easily the most balanced we saw.
Yeah, our offensively, we could get the ball to anybody and everybody at any given moment. And that's one of the things that we haven't had offensively in quite a few years. You know, in the past, maybe we've had two receivers or three receivers tops that we felt comfortable throwing the football to. And when you're a spread team, four wide, sometimes five wide, that really limits what you're able to do. But our offense this year, you know, typically in the past, we don't throw the ball to the Z receiver much. And Chandler Wired was our Z receiver. And I remember thinking and going back and talking with the coaches after a few 7-on-7 outings, and that we've got to expand our playbook a little bit. We've got to find ways to get the ball to our Z receiver. We got to find ways to get the ball to Chandler, because he's explosive, as he proved this year. And then, you know, defensively, just strong across the board. But you had mentioned May South defense, and those guys, their front four were as good as anybody we've ever seen. That Seville kid, as you mentioned, he's a Division I prospect already as a sophomore. And I know they had three Division I athletes, although not going to play Division I football, but they had three Division I athletes in their back end, in their secondary as well. So they had athletes rolling around in their secondary and in their front. So
I want to get back to the wide receiver for just a minute. You mm-hmm. know, we've had some spectacular individual seasons. I think of Christian Ulsaker. Mm-hmm. I think of Jeff Reed, Jordan Hart. Mm-hmm. But this year, when you look at the numbers, people are saying, well, guy, you know, they didn't have anybody at home. But you spread it out. It just seemed like you had five guys, and every game it was a different guy, it seemed like. I mean, one game, you know, you'd have a guy catch like six balls for over 100 yards. The next game he might catch one, but then somebody else would catch five or six balls for 100 yards. You just, you know, teams would adjust to that one guy, then you'd go to someplace else. And, of course, Thomas Diggs, I always thought, was kind of your safety mm-hmm. valve at the tight end. He was a great pass-catching tight end. And, you know, really you can't say he's a tight end, because he was kind of a wide receiver in a tight end's body.
Well, that's again, one of those – another prime example of a kid that we had to change our formation structure. We had to change what we did offensively to build around Thomas. I know it didn't appear like it on the stat sheet, but Thomas is our go-to guy. And everything is based off of, we want to throw the football to Tom. And if they're taking him away, well, this is what we're going to do next. So everything was predicated off of getting the ball to Diggs. It just so happens that everyone else knew that. And they would take him away. They would wind out an outside linebacker or spin down a safety to try and take him out of the game. And if they did that, we just went to somebody else. We had complete trust in all five of our guys to catch it.
And like you said, Thomas Diggs' numbers weren't overwhelming, mm-hmm. but the respect he got a lot of honors since the season ended. And the coaches knew who Thomas Diggs was.
There's no question. There's a lot of respect for Tom. You know, for Tom to beat out a Division I tight end in Brendan Webb is truly remarkable. I remember talking to Tom right after the Andale game, and it's always hard to talk to our players after that last loss. But I remember talking to Tom and saying, you know, son, you're a first-team tight end. And he grinned from ear to ear, and he was definitely thankful for the position he was in.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Chase Pavlovich on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. So you started off 1-1, and mm-hmm. I think that you knew going into this season what you would get in weeks 3 through 9, and that it wouldn't necessarily be easy, but I think that you knew that you would be the better team in the next 7 games, and that was certainly the case, beating Winfield, then Augusta, routing Circle down there in Towanda, beating Rose Hill. You get into districts and beat Hayes, Wamego, and Abilene, and really, I think when you started district play and went on the road to Hayes is when it kind of locked in, and that you knew defensively you weren't going to give up anything, mm-hmm. and you knew what you were going to get offensively to end the season.
Mm-hmm. You know, through the course of the season, one of the big games that's often overlooked for us was the Augusta game. You know, I realize we beat them 40-0, and last year beat them 41-0. I realize what it looks like on the stat sheet, but Augusta is a very good football team, very well coached football team, and it was one of those games where I really felt like, okay, this is the turning point of our season. This is where our guys realized, all right, we are that good. And after that point, I really felt like things just kept snowballing from there. And you know, you mentioned district play. That's where that season renews. That's where you press the reset button, and no one cares what you've done the prior 6 games.
You talked about that Augusta game. What I remember from that game is keeping stats. They had to have a 37-yard run against our second mm-hmm. team in the fourth quarter to get out of the hole. They were minus yards, and that 37-yard run got them out of the hole. And I also remember that game, Chance Whitehead, who is a very good quarterback, yeah. a very good athlete. I mean, he was just absolutely running for his life. He was like minus 30 or 40 in that game. I think we sacked him 7 or 8 times. Mm-hmm. And both times, the last 2 years, you mentioned, you know, we've beat Augusta by like a combined 81-0. Augusta came into that game both years undefeated and just steamrolled their first 3 teams. And we were their first test. And they got kind of a reality check after that. And I know, you know, they were brimming with confidence going into that game. But, boy, they had to be shell-shocked when that once our defense just took over, and then you hit on some big plays offensively. That game was, in fact, you know, that was supposed to be like one of the area games of the week, and it turned into just a lopsided mess for Augusta.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we needed at that point in the season, a little bit of confidence against a really good football team and a good program. So that really helped us turn the corner and look on to the rest of our season.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Chase Pavlovich on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. We'll take another break. When we come back, we will dive into the postseason. It's starting with the big Bueller game, which was one of the most exciting football games of any level I have ever watched, and had to be on the edge of my seat, having my heart almost pop out of my chest the whole night. So we'll be back after this. You're listening to the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show on 96.7 FM KBBE. We're back on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show this morning on 96.7 FM KBBE. It's a special football edition as we finally get a chance to recap this season, as the Bullpup football team went 10-2, made it all the way to the sub-state championship, and they were about 1 minute and one good drive away, and finishing that drive away from potentially playing for a state championship game. Joining us is Bullpup football coach Chase Pavlovich, and I've hinted at the postseason there. Let's go back to the first postseason game, where you were 8-1 at this point, and Bueller was 7-2 coming into this game. And the matchup everybody kind of thought was going to be you guys against Andale, but because mm-hmm. Andale beat Bueller, it set it up for the rematch in week number 10. And going into that game, I think that we knew there wouldn't be a 33-21 score like the first game. And we were definitely right with that, with it being 7-7 at the end of regulation. Started off good. You were able to score in the first quarter, but so were they. It was a defensive masterpiece in the second half. You just didn't know if anybody was going to score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, both defenses and both teams were very good. And just unfortunate that it had to come down to that in the round one, the playoffs. Now, that's been remedied for next year, and that's for a later discussion. But, it's just unfortunate that two teams of that caliber had to match up. And it's, you know, we could have very easily been sitting at home after that first game.
And, you know, people were talking. The big conversation during the week was, there's no way two games in a row Brown can be shut down. He's just too mm-hmm. good. You know, he against everybody else, he was getting about 150 to 200 yards. He got 49 in the first game. But the second game, He only had 20 yards on 15 carries, and I mean, you could just sense the frustration on him. I think his longest run of the night was like 6 yards. You just really had his number in that game. And, you know, Buehler's not a great passing team because they're just so ground-oriented with that big offensive line. But it was almost like your guys were saying, hey, we got to prove that, you know, holding him to 49 in the first game was no fluke. And, I mean, he had a bullseye on his back the whole night.
Yeah, he did. And he's a very good football player. He's proven that over the course of the last 3 years, really, at the varsity level. But what truly sets Buehler apart and all of their tailbacks apart is their offensive line. As you mentioned, they're so good up front that it almost appears that, you know, when their tailbacks are getting knocked in the teeth in the backfield, that they're shocked, they're surprised. They're not used to that. They're used to a big push from their offensive line. So the game was really won, I felt, up front with our defensive line, just controlling the line of scrimmage. There are certain tailbacks out there that are very good, but if they don't have much of a seam, they're not going to be able to create much. The Brown kid was just simply not able to get open, find a crease all night.
And that defensive line, you had Stuffel being in silo at the ends, and I thought things kind of turned when Khalil Lisbon went in to kind of as the nose guard, so to speak, or tackle. You play some kind of funky funch sometimes, mm-hmm. then Michael Mendez is allowed to freelance. And I really thought your defense got a whole lot better because Khalil Lisbon gave you that physical presence. You didn't know what you had with him when he got here, and it mm-hmm. took some time to kind of figure it out. But he's kind of a freakish athlete.
Well, he is a freakish athlete. He's one of those.
Dude.
Yeah, Dana Dimmel, who's now I guess the head coach at UTEP, he came in last Wednesday and he said, "Well, let me meet this Lisbon kid." So I went and pulled Khalil out of class and Dana talked to him a little bit. And I remember the conversation afterwards is, Dana Dimmel said, this guy's a dude. And Coach Brown from Fort Hays came in yesterday, talked to some of our seniors and really liked some of our kids at the next level at Fort Hays. And he met with Khalil as well. And, you know, the kid is special. He's got a ton of potential. Something that a lot of people don't know about him is he just turned 16 at the end of the season.
God.
So he should probably be a sophomore right now. So if we can keep Khalil's nose to the ground and keep him involved in the classroom, and he's going to be pretty special.
And he still had one of the plays of the year. You put him in the circle game as a running back, and after earlier in the game, he'd made a tackle on the kickoff return team where he basically face-planted a kid. And then you put him in on running back, and there was a poor, about 145-pound JV defensive back for Circle, tried to make a tackle on him. And he was kind of an ink spot. And, you know, Khalil Lisbon next year, in short yardage situations, I got a feeling you guys might explore the possibility of putting him in on short yardage situations mm-hmm. because he is – a runaway freight train with the football.
He is. He's a special kid. Very, very polite kid. We're happy to have him. He's one of those cases where he's obviously great for our program. He's a very good football player, but we're very good for him too because he's one of those kids that needs a lot of help and support. And his mom's an awesome lady, and we're happy to have them in our community. And I think it works both ways. A kid like Khalil in McPherson is gonna thrive as well.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Jace Pavlovich on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. So we've talked a little bit about regulation mm-hmm. against Buehler. So it's 7-7, you're tied. Buehler gets the ball to start overtime. You guys won the toss, which was a great break that I haven't heard many people talk about, that was a defining moment in that game too. Mm-hmm. On the first play, Jace Alexander, we thought, had forced a fumble, but they ruled Buehler quarterback Ben Epp down. A couple of plays later, they score. So it's 14-7. You guys are sending the offense out onto the field. And you hit on it at the banquet that with Drew Laberto, he played a really good game in that one on the defensive side for mm-hmm. one. But you felt very confident at putting him in the game at quarterback down near the goal line. He ended up scoring the touchdown to mm-hmm. put you guys down one. That was a very good move, and a move that might be overlooked because you have your first team all-league quarterback back there, but you want the ball in the hands of a guy like Drew Labert too in that situation.
Well, no question. You know, going back to their first drive in the overtime, the ball was out, and that's one of the things I really got to watch myself. We have huddle sideline. We have our iPads out, and we see the play right after it happens. And I got to watch myself a little bit because I did have a friendly conversation with the side judge about the fact that it was a fumble. But Jace did a great job of, you know, getting the football out and securing the tackle as well. And when we got the ball back, as you mentioned, you know, I have complete faith in Kyler Hoppus. Obviously, you know, he was our starting quarterback. But when it comes down to it, I felt like our offensive line was doing a very good job in our Wildcat set. And who better to have the football at the end of the game than Drew Labert? The kid is just very simply a winner. I can't explain how he gets things done, but he just does. And, again, he ran the ball very tough. Our offensive line, they did a tremendous job in that overtime battle to create holes for Drew to run through, and you know, once Drew's through the hole, he's going to take care of the rest.
So you're down by one. It's 14-13. I think you lined up and then took a timeout. So sort of saw what Buehler was going to throw out there. You walk back and get all the guys over on the sideline, and I think you said, guys, what do we want to do? And after missing a couple of field goals, well, getting two field goals blocked earlier in the game, I think you made the decision, and the guy said, hey, we want to go for two. We want to win it right here.
Sure.
And Sambo with the Jade play call, it was in the back of everybody's mind. And as everybody walked out onto the field in a formation that I hadn't seen all season long, I think that there were some people that might have been going, oh, no, kick the extra point. And then when the play finished and it was all over, they said, oh, thank God they went for two. Wow.
Yeah, it was one of those things. It's just hero or goat. And then, you know, when you're in my profession, you're going to get questioned all the time. And that's just part of it. I understand. But going into it, we went into the Wildcat set with Drew once again with no intention of running a football play. We just wanted them to burn their time out and see what we were going to do. We wanted them to prepare for that because that Wildcat set had been good for us all night. So going into it, I had no intentions of calling a play. We get the timeout, and we come off to the sidelines, and we have an arsenal, a small arsenal of trick plays that we don't call them trick plays. I shouldn't have said the word trick because it's not a trick. It's a guaranteed go for two play. It's one of those things where we know we're going to get those 3 yards to get the 2 points. And we have a small arsenal of different plays that we can choose from. And each assistant coach, they were in charge of finding one play, one thing that we can do to get ourselves in the end zone. And we decided to go with Jade. It's one of those situations where we got out on the field. We explained it. I think it was week 3 where we went through the play call. And kids are like, well, all right, what's it called? And we had no idea. That's one of the, we had no idea what we were going to call any of these things, any of these plays, and I just came up with it. And our kids executed very, very well. I mean, up to the minute detail of our quarterback Kyler, he has to chip on the defensive end, which so happened to be Webb. And just because if we're running that reverse right back into Webb, he's so athletic, the play is dead right there. But if you watch that film again, you'll notice that Kyler Hoppus does a great job, very disciplined. He punches down on the Webb kid, gets just enough of him to get that Webb kid to squeeze down, and that's what allowed Gabe Hoover to get to the edge and make the play. So across the board, it was execution at its finest.
And when you look at it on film, it almost looked too easy. I mean, the play just unfolded like you practiced it, and you know, Buehler was just in shock. But, you know, you snap the ball to Kinnaman, Jace Kinnaman, and then he hands it to Hoover. I mean, you have to have a good handoff, quick, clean handoff. You can't have any bobbles in there. And you said you practiced that play, you know, like the last 8 weeks of the year. So you knew that it could be a successful play. And then the only question was, would Kyler Hoppus be able to see the ball in the lights? Yeah. And he made a great catch and set off one of the greatest celebrations I've seen at McPherson Stadium ever.
Well, it was. It was a great celebration. It was a great moment. But what made it even more special is if you watch that film, you'll see our guys who have a ton of respect for the Buehler kids. Mm-hmm. You'll see our guys consoling those Buehler kids that were just absolutely devastated on the field. And you know, my heart goes out to them. And, you know, even though that this is a huge rivalry, there's no hatred here. There's just mutual respect. And to see our guys help pick those Buehler kids up, it was special because I know that if the tables were reversed, they would be doing the same for us. And that's truly what's special about this game is even though we've been born and raised to hate each other, there's just a ton of respect for each other.
Yeah, and you even got a text from one of the Buehler players, and mm-hmm. I don't know, someone said maybe an email or something like that, I don't know, but mm-hmm. The Buehler players, obviously very sportsmanlike.
Yeah, Jet Burkhart, one of their stud linebackers and running backs, he texted me after the game and said, you know, Coach, I just have a ton of respect for your players, your kids, your program, your community. And he said, I'm going to be a Bullpup football fan for the next 3 weeks now that you guys have beat us out. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's not really about the wins and losses. It's about things like that that you get from other players. And I know Steve Warner very well, and he was nothing but appreciative and complimentary of our kids, and again, that's just what this game is all about.
I think we could probably talk about the playoffs for 3 hours on this show for just three games. So you beat Buehler 15-14 in overtime, all of this emotion, all of this intensity, and then it sets up for going on the road to May South, another mm-hmm. type of destiny mm-hmm. game that it had been May South that had been the kryptonite for the last three games, losing to them twice last year, losing the second game of the season this year. Mm-hmm. It was obviously a will to go beat those guys because you had been waiting so long, and just the start of the game, everything seemed to bounce your way when the first time you guys played them, nothing bounced your way.
Yeah, we had things occur in week two that that just doesn't happen in a normal football game. Like it, they threw a pass and it bounces off one of their guys' face masks, then bounces off one of our hands and into another May South receiver, his hands. It just snowballed like that week two. And as you mentioned, you know, in the second round of the playoffs, everything went our way. It really did. But our guys were a big reason as to why we were always in the right spots.
And the thing about that game is so strange. You win the game with four first downs, less than 200 mm-hmm. yards of offense, but it showed the versatility of your team. You took advantage of a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. Your special teams came up big with a big kickoff return. And it didn't matter that your offense only had four first downs and about 150 yards. Mm-hmm. You had short fields. Your scoring drives were short drives because your special teams and defense set it up. So really, mm-hmm. You didn't have to have a lot of yards in that game.
Well, in prior to that, in the three games that we had lost to May South, I really felt like I did a poor job, and I opened things up offensively because they're always such a good team defensively. We had to throw the ball a little bit more, and we ended up committing a lot of turnovers, and our defense was playing so well that we went against our offensive philosophy in that they had seven guys in the box. Well, we're still going to run the football. So I didn't put our offense into a position for success play calling wise, because especially when you get up two scores on a team like May South, you got to keep that clock moving. It didn't look good on the stat sheet, but I also, you know, in terms of play calling, I didn't really allow a lot of success because our biggest enemy that game, once we got up two scores, was the clock, and we had to keep that sucker rolling.
So you won 28-7 down at May South. You got rid of all of the demons from the last three games against them, and that set up the sub-state semifinal matchup with Andale. Mm-hmm. Andale had been a team that had not lost all season long, and because of the division they play in, I don't think they got enough credit mm-hmm. for the work that they did this year, but when you looked back on film and watched that Buehler game, they dominated Buehler. And I think that was something that obviously was a red flag for you to say, this is a really good football team. Defensively, I remember their turnover margin number. Their differential was like plus 30. And when you have that type of a defensive presence, it makes you so good. And that was ultimately the biggest factor in that playoff game, too.
Sure. It really felt like Andale, what we were doing in preparing for Buehler to get out of the West, Andale was doing against us all offseason. Defensively, they went to a 3-4 scheme, which we had never seen them do ever. And that's a defense that's really tough on our offense. And it showed when we played. And then, you know, offensively, they couldn't get a whole lot going themselves. But it was just what we did to May South the prior week is exactly what Andale did to us. And when Andale got up two scores, we had to play catch up. We had to open up things a little bit more offensively. And that led to five turnovers.
Andale came into the game averaging 300 yards rushing a game. And they end up with, like, less than 10 yards. I mean, of course, they had a couple of big, you know, a bad snap and everything that kind of led to some minus yardage. But if somebody had told you we're going to hold Andale to 10 yards rushing or seven, I think I had 7 yards rushing, and someone told you that before the game, I think you would have said, man, we're going to be playing for a state championship.
Exactly. And that's we did a great job of stacking the box and stopping their run, which is what you have to do against Andale. They had three schemes that we had not seen before in which they brought a back out of the backfield. The first one that they ran, the first score that they had out of their robust set, hats off to them. Scheme-wise, there's not a whole lot you can do to prevent something like that other than sack the quarterback. So that was very, very well drawn up. Their coaching staff did a tremendous job with that one. The other two, I will tell you, after watching the film quite a few times, we should have stopped, and quite frankly, we did stop all year long. It's just one of those things where we just didn't execute on those two plays, and really those three plays defensively, that was the difference in the game. Three plays defensively, and of course, five turnovers.
Now you had the ball three times in the fourth quarter with a chance to either tie or take the lead, and I mentioned it the other night that even down by seven, getting the ball back with, what, about 3 minutes left, I think everybody on your sideline felt like we're going to drive down and win this game. And I don't think we really talked about it on air, but I'm sure that the thought came up of if we score, are we going for two? You never know what can happen. But I think everybody felt confident going into that drive. You picked up a couple of third and fourth down conversions. I love the fight that those guys showed coming down the stretch. With their backs up against the wall and their season on the line, they never back down.
And that's this group. That's what they do. Starts with the senior leadership. Those guys don't like to lose. They don't lose, and it shows. And that has rubbed off to the juniors and sophomores. You know, one of the things that we do to try and foster that environment is in the springtime, and this is something that it's really neat to see. After school in the springtime, for those kids that aren't involved in sport, we have what's called tough man competition. And we'll do different things just to foster a competitive mentality. We'll do tire wars. We'll do different odds and ends out on our practice field just to make kids compete and not give up. And I really think that that's really turned the tide in terms of our kids' mentality. Those seniors have it to begin with. But those younger kids are starting to fall in line with that as well, thanks to a lot of the stuff that takes place there.
We're talking with Bullpup football coach Chase Pavlovich on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. We'll take one more break, wrap up the season, and look ahead a little bit to next year and everything that will be coming back. So we'll be back right after this on 96.7 FM KBBE. Final segment on this morning's Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. Jim Joyner and Steve Sell joined by Bullpup football coach Jace Pavlovich to recap the 2017 season. A 10-2 record and falling just about 7 points and about 1 minute shy of potentially playing for a state championship game this year. There are a lot of things to take away from this season, but one of them that I will take away is just how hard this team fought all the time and how dominant they were defensively. And I talked about it the other night that You told me at the beginning of the year that this defense was going to blow out the defense from last year, which was the best in school history, and they did that. This defense was so dominant from the first snap of the year until the last snap of the year.
Yeah, there are so many variables with that, starting with this summer. you look at it, we played Blue Valley North twice this summer, and they were the 6A state champion. We played Bishop Carroll twice at Fort Hayes' camp. They were the 5A state champion. We played all of these teams throughout 4A that were just solid. The 4A Division II state champion in Holcomb, we played them three times this summer. So, you know, leading up to it, we try and find the best possible competition that we can find and play those guys, and that's going to make us a lot better. You know, one I failed to mention is Garden City when they came up here. They were a state semifinalist in 6A. So we find the best competition throughout the course of the summer to play and keep challenging ourselves. Defensively, again, we are very good, but what allows that to happen is our depth. Offensively, we had some solid football players, so those guys didn't have to play both ways. I understand that the mentality of it, I played both ways, you played both ways, we all played both ways when we were in high school, but everyone else was too. Nowadays, when you got guys like May South, for example, they're off on the sideline, they're talking X's and O's, they're fresh and they're ready to come back on the field. If you're a guy that's playing every snap, you're not going to be as good as a guy who has 20 minutes of rest and comes back out. It's just that simple. What is it? Fatigue makes cowards of us all. I believe that was Lombardi said that. So we're able to roll fresh bodies out and back in all of the time. So when we talk about our younger guys and their potential, we mean it. If you can play for us, you're going to be on the field on one side or the other. So it starts with our depth, which we did have this season. Those guys on defense were just playing defense, which was awesome. Now, they also were strong, physical. They could run. We did not have a weak spot. In being here 13 years, defensively, and as a defensive coordinator in the past, we've always had to hide one or two kids or maybe hide a position grouping. Maybe our linebacking core was not up to par, but our secondary was great and our defensive line was great. This season, across the board, at all three levels, at every position, we were really good. And that definitely showed on the stat book.
And as we look ahead to next season, you had the junior class standing on the stage at the banquet, and there is so much on offense that comes back. We talked about it coming into this season, so much on defense that comes back. But offensively, there's a whole lot of talent. There's a first-team all-league quarterback. There's a first-team all-league running back. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of all-league wide receivers. You get a good offensive line back. This offense coming up next year, maybe some of those guys will have to play a little bit more on the defensive side, but this offense is going to be one of the best in the league, if not one of the best in the state.
We expect that we're pretty solid offensively. What you may see next fall, it might be completely opposite of what you saw this fall. It's just a matter of what kind of kids we have. We have a bunch of kids with a great offensive mentality that have a ton of skill on the offensive side. And I really feel like we're going to be able to put some points up on the board next season defensively. We got some good young kids, too, and as you mentioned, we may have to have more two-way players, although I don't want to have two-way players. We may just simply have to put guys out there on both sides of the football. So what you may see next fall might be a little different than what you saw this fall, but we expect that the outcome is the same. We expect to win a lot of football games.
And it will be a different season for sure because you get rid of the district format, which has been what has been happening in this state for a long time. 4A will now no longer have that. So that means it's a different mentality going into the season that every game from the very beginning is very important. Not that they weren't important going into this year, but you knew that come week 7, you had some time to figure everything out. Right. So it's a different mentality going into this season. You get Salina South on the schedule next year, who you haven't seen for a couple of years. It is a different season and a different mentality to coach.
It is. It is. Every game matters next year, which is something that I'm totally supportive of. I was it 3 years ago, emailed all coaches in 4A. Every coach in 4A Division I was for the change except for one. I believe it was Kansas City Pipers coach who I believe dropped down to 3 or 4A Division II anyway. So everybody was supportive of it. We got it done. So basically we got the 8-game schedule next season. Week 9, the first playoff game, Keisha is going to call a bracket game. So if we have a winning record going into that week 9, we're going to host no matter what. And then from then on, it's just the top seed will host. So there are certain tiebreakers. There are certain things built in. But I really feel like it's the most equitable and fair way to generate a postseason where, you know, if we're 7-1 and Bueller's 8-0, or we're 8-0 and Bueller's 7-1, something to that effect, we're not going to see each other until the state semis. I really felt like, you know, geographically it makes sense to do things the way that they have done it for years. It kind of watered down the playoffs a little bit in that it's kind of the luck of the draw. Next year it's going to start out to where it's not the luck of the draw. It's either you're good enough to advance or you're not. And I think it's a welcome change. We look forward to that change. And again, every game matters. We really want to be at home. We love playing at home. McPherson Stadium on a Friday night, there's nothing like it. We've said that a bunch of times, and it is so true. We have great support from our community. So we want to win each and every football game so that we can be at home through the course of the playoffs.
It was a really fun season. You guys finished 10-2 and make it all the way to the sub-state championship game. Coach Chase Pavlovich, thanks for coming in with us this morning. Here we are an hour later after diving into everything. I think that this will be very cool for people to look back on, maybe not at the end of this year, but we'll post it online. And so maybe in 3 or 4 years when you're feeling sad one night, instead of pulling up a huddle highlight film, you'll just pull up this and listen to you talk about what a fun team this year's team was.
Just a great group of guys. And you know, one thing that before we wrap things up that I do want to mention is what a great group of assistant coaches we have, too. I've said it a million times. We have the best coaching staff in the state of Kansas. Those assistants are just truly phenomenal. They work, I believe it was 99 days in a row. I didn't give them one day off on a Saturday or Sunday. And their family certainly didn't choose the profession that they're in, but they have to deal with it. And it's just awesome to go to work every day with the group of guys that I have.
Coach Chase Pavlovich with us on the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. Thanks for coming in with us.
Thank you, guys.
That will do it for this morning's Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show. We will be back next Saturday morning with all the basketball coaches to recap all of their games from the Friday night. For Coach Chase Pavlovich and for Steve Sell, I'm Jim Joyner. Thanks for listening to the Perkins Family Restaurant Coaches Show on 96.7 FM KBBE.